Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Doing just fine, Justin. How are you doing?
I'm okay. We got any announcements tonight?
Yes. CrimeCon UK, September 25th and 26th, 2021. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, but you're thinking about going, use our code GENY21. You'll save 10%. I think it's probably going to be a blast, so you probably want to be there. So get your tickets if you can. Also, nothing's been planned yet, but next year, 2022, will mark 10 years since Justin and Aaron started Generation Y Podcast. So be on the lookout. We're going to try and plan something for next year. What do you think, Justin?
I had no idea time flies when you're having fun, apparently. but yeah, we'll probably try to plan a Kansas City thing, and then maybe a couple other things around the world. Tonight's case, we're going to cross the pond again and go back in time to June 30th of 2003, where a 14-year-old student was brutally murdered on her way to meet her boyfriend. She was found naked and bound at the wrists, and her throat was cut. Her boyfriend was the one that discovered her body. What happens next might surprise or might not surprise a lot of you. But with that, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about the murder of 14-year-old Jodie Jones in Dalkeith, which is a small town in Midlothian, Scotland.
Jodie Jones was a student at St. David High School. She was part of the alternative scene. Her favorite band was Nirvana, and she had a lot of common interests with her boyfriend, Luke Mitchell. They had been together for 3 months, and they liked to spend a lot of time together, spend all their weekends together, and they were seen together a lot at school. If you were to look in Jody's personal journals, you would read passages such as, "I think I'm actually in love with Luke. Well, nearly. God, I think I'd die if he finished with me. When I'm not with him, I want to be. When I'm with him, I'm happy. He's the only person that makes me forget about most of the shit in my life.
But sometimes when I can't forget, he helps me feel better. No matter what he says, I believe him, and that is really dangerous. Sounds like she's really head over heels for him. And they're two teenagers in love, falling hard for each other.
That's not really uncommon, though, is it?
No. You got your hormones bubbling over, and you find your first true love. It happens. What about Luke? What do we know about him?
He was just a little bit older than Jody. He was also 14, but nearly 15 at that time, and was also a student at St. David's High School. And they had the same circle of friends. It's believed that Luke was using and selling marijuana to other kids at school, including his friends. And if you look into this case, you'll often read that Jody didn't use regularly, but I'd say it's kind of irrelevant since when we start getting into this case, we'll find out that she had been grounded for a while due to being caught with marijuana. Jody lived in the East Houses area of Dalkeith. Luke lived in the New Battle area of Dalkeith. He lived with his mother, Corinne, and his older brother, Shane. Now, their houses were about 1.4 miles apart. Luke's parents were separated, and Luke sometimes spent the weekends at his dad's house in Livingston, which is about 23 miles away. It's also said that Luke was seeing another girl at the time named Kimberly Thompson. Let's get into this case, Justin.
So it's a Monday, June 30th, 2003. As you said, Jody's grounded. She got in trouble with her parents, so she doesn't have any plans to go out and do anything that day. But her parents say she's off grounding. She can go out. So she texts Luke from her mom's phone at 4:35 p.m. telling him, hey, I can go out. Luke responded at 4:36, right on the dot, and 4:38. Jody would end up leaving her home at around 4:50 in the p.m. Her mother said goodbye and gave her a kiss and sent her on her way. It was understood she was going to meet Luke. Now, they would usually meet at Roan's Dyke, which is a path between their two houses, and it ran between Talbot Park and Campbell Park. This is a wooded area, so Jody's mom didn't want her walking by herself. It was always understood that she would meet up with Luke at the entrance to the path, and then they would walk together. Now, at 4:54 p.m., Luke called the speaking clock. He then calls Jody Jones' house at around 5:32 p.m., and no one picks up. He calls again at 5:40 p.m., and Alan Ovens answers. Ovens told Luke that Jody was not home and had actually gone to meet him. Luke replied, okay, cool, and they hung up. Now, what Luke doesn't know is that Jody's not coming, and what Jody's parents don't know is that she's not going to ever come home again. Her curfew is at 10 p.m., but she doesn't show up. And her mother, Judith, calls all of Jody's friends in the area, sends them texts, and even contacts Luke at 10:41 p.m. Luke calls Jody's mom and informs her that he has not seen Jody all night. And of course, this is going to cause alarm with everyone because they know something's wrong.
By 11 p.m., there is a group of people assembling to look for Jody. They include Jody's grandmother, Alice Walker, Jody's sister, Janine, and Janine's boyfriend, Stephen Kelly. Also present is Luke Mitchell. Now, they begin going down this path, the Roan's Dyke path, and Luke Mitchell has brought along his dog, which they say is an Alsatian dog, but it's a German Shepherd. And there's a whole story about these dogs and how at one point during the war, back in World War II, the British didn't want to refer to these dogs as German Shepherds because of, so they renamed them Alsatian dogs, but they're German Shepherds. This dog is also a trained tracker dog. And I'll just spoil it now, but the police don't bring tracking dogs when they show up. But Luke does. So they're going along this path. The dog, it's named Mia. It starts getting excited. So she runs over near this section of this stone wall and is jumping up and down. So Luke goes over the wall and is looking around, and suddenly he makes a noise. And so Alice Walker, who is near him, she tries to follow. This is at about 11:15 p.m. It's dark, but Luke has brought a torch with him, a flashlight, and he's looking around and he sees something white on the ground. And as he gets closer, he can see that it's Jody's body. She's lying on the ground. Her feet are kind of near the wall, and he's alerting the others. So, of course, other people are coming over, including Stephen Kelly. He actually joins Luke, but he said he didn't see anything right away until he actually approached a tree. And when he looked around the tree, that's when he could see Jody.
Now, this wall is at least 6 feet tall. So when Luke went over the wall, they can't really see what he's doing. And even Stephen is the only one that's kind of like able to get over the wall by himself. Everybody else is going to need assistance here. This isn't an easy thing to scale.
So it's Luke who gets a hold of emergency services. Of course, they're going to send law enforcement out. Let's talk about what they find when they see Jody.
She's only wearing her socks, and they're rolled down the front of her feet. There's no evidence of recent sexual abuse, but her throat has been slashed multiple times. The jugular and carotid artery have both been severed. She has incised cuts on her right cheek, around her eyes, on her forearm, and her left breast and abdomen. There are signs of struggle in the immediate area and a lot of defensive injuries. Her body has been injured post-mortem, meaning whoever was doing this continued after she died. There's blood everywhere. So you can imagine that whoever did this probably either cut their own hand from wielding the knife or has scrapes and bruises on them because Jody was fighting back. Now, you would think, we found the body, let's call the police, it's obviously a murder, they're going to come out, lock down the crime scene, collect evidence, get this all wrapped up, right, Aaron?
You would think.
But what do the police do instead?
The police do not really lock the scene down. They lock the very, I guess you could say, most immediate area down, but that's about it. And they don't protect the body because it rains and the body is never covered.
They leave her there all night.
And as you know, water plus forensic evidence, it's just a bad mix. The police are very interested in Luke Mitchell. They discover that he's the boyfriend of the victim and that he was the one to find her. So you could say they didn't quite lock the crime scene down, but they lock him down. They take him to a police station. They take all of his clothing off of him. They scrape his fingernails. Now, what they see is someone who looks like they haven't been recently washed. You know, his fingernails are dirty.
He's a smelly 14-year-old boy. Yeah. They also question all the other members of the party, and they say that Luke's dog alerted, and then Luke found the body.
Alice Walker, Jody's grandmother, admits to touching her granddaughter after she saw her body. But the police are focusing on Luke, and they're really only talking to the others to get information. So far, Luke is really the only suspect on the scene, at least person of interest, I should say. So they don't treat anyone else as a suspect. And what that means is they're only collecting evidence from Luke Mitchell.
They also are referring to Luke as a voluntary attender, meaning he's only there for questioning. So here in America, if you are being questioned, if you are being arrested, they have to read you your Miranda rights. But as a voluntary attender, they don't. But they tell him that he doesn't have to answer any questions, but any information he gives is going to be recorded and used as evidence later, which right off the bat, Aaron, that's not how that really works, but maybe they do it different over in Scotland.
Well, in Scotland, because they're just questioning him, they can hold him for 6 hours, which is what they do because he's held until 7 a.m. The problem with this whole situation, though, is he asked for his mother. He asked for an attorney. and they didn't get him either.
I feel like they didn't get him either because they deemed him this voluntary attendee and not under arrest. Like, I feel like they were playing with loopholes in policy and procedure here.
So in other words, I need to see my mom. I need to see a lawyer. And they're saying, no, that's not necessary because we're just asking you questions here. We're going to let you go. It's no big deal. And that's not how it's supposed to work, though. I don't care where you're at.
I agree.
So they want to know what he'd been up to. He said that the last time he saw Jody was during lunch at school on the very day she was murdered. And he said he went home and Jody took the bus home. He said he got home around 4 and he got a text message from Jody sometime around 4:20 saying, hey, do you want to hang out? I can get out now. And he said he could go out later, but he had to make dinner at his house because he lived with his mother and his older brother. They would take turns making dinner. So according to Luke, there was no set time to meet.
He thought she was grounded. So she calls him up out of the blue and then they're making plans, but they haven't made any plans.
He says on the night of Jody's murder, he was at home cooking dinner. His mom arrived around 5:15 and he said he stayed at home waiting for Jody to show up. Now, I'm going to read into that a little bit because normally he would meet her outside her place or at the start of the path near her place on the East House's end. But on this evening, probably because he had to make dinner and because this was all sprung on him all of a sudden about, oh, I can come out, we can hang out, then maybe he had said, you'll have to meet me at my place because I'm making dinner. So he said after he was done, he went near to the path near his side of things, which is on the west end. And he said he hung around there for a little bit and then walked over to Barndale Cottages. He was trying to see if he could see her anywhere. But after about 45 minutes, she didn't show up. So he thought, well, maybe she got in trouble again or changed her mind about going. After all, she didn't normally go on her own to go visit him. That's not the way it was supposed to work anyway. According to her mom, you have company when you're in the wooded area on that wooded path. So he ended up calling up a school friend, David High, and they met up about 25 minutes later and hung out at New Battle Abbey College. Mitchell then said he went home around 9:05 to 9:10 and hung out at home watching a movie. And it was at about 9:41 that evening when Jody's mother texted him and he called her back.
But it was around the time that Jody didn't show up. He called Jody's house, talked to Ovens, who said she had left.
The autopsy on Jody Jones was performed by Professor Anthony Pasuttle. And as you had mentioned earlier, Justin, this was a brutal crime. Her head was almost decapitated from her body because of how deep the cuts went through her windpipe and to the back of her neck. And it also appeared as though she had been beaten multiple times across her body and head before she was actually strangled, and her own trousers were used to bind her at the wrists. That's when whoever had done this started cutting her. The incised injuries to her forearm, breast, eyelids, and eye area, and injuries to the corner of her mouth and to her right ear, some of which seemed to suggest that she was mutilated post-mortem. The pathologist also went on to say that Jody would have had 5.5 liters of blood in her body and that most of it had bled out of her. So they can't imagine that whoever did this didn't get messy, didn't get bloody.
I can only imagine they would have blood on their shoes. They would have blood on their arms, just blood somewhere. As we know, the police brought Luke in. He didn't have any blood on him and he didn't have any nicks, cuts, or wounds. They scraped under his nails. They took pictures of his body. Nothing.
They examined him very closely. One thing that was expected And they did find, and this is because over the course of time, they conduct DNA testing on all of Luke's clothing and on Jody's clothing, is they expected to find Luke's DNA. And they did find Luke's DNA on Jody, but that isn't crazy because they were seeing each other. They were in a relationship.
They continued to collect hair, semen, saliva, and blood evidence from the scene. Jody's sweatshirt had a blood stain on it that was later linked to her older sister's boyfriend, Stephen Kelly. She was said to have had borrowed the sweatshirt from her sister. Kelly, his alibi was that he was eating dinner with the Joneses family on the night of Jody's murder. They find DNA on the sweatshirt, and it's linked back to her sister's boyfriend. I don't know. Everyone should keep that in mind. Now, what makes them really hone in on Luke Mitchell at this point?
Well, first of all, he's the boyfriend, so that already puts him on the map. Second, he discovered Jody's body. Third, it's because there are witnesses. The witnesses they have include Andrina Bryson, who said she saw a male resembling Luke that night. This is between 4:50 and 4:55. She said he was with a girl at the east entrance to the wooded path where Jody's body would later be found. Now, this witness, Andrina, was driving her vehicle around a corner. Bryson described this guy as having messy hair, kind of longish hair, and being in his 20s, and said he was wearing a khaki green colored fishing jacket or parka. Now, she's given a photo lineup, including 12 images, and she chooses one, but it's the only photograph of a male with long hair. His picture was also the only photograph that was set against a white backdrop. So the photograph really stood out.
I mean, I can see how a 14-year-old can look older. I can see how she saw messy hair. Now she's seeing a picture of Luke who has quote unquote messy hair and a white background. Well, it's because the photo was taken in a police station, whereas everybody else, it was just a regular photo.
Well, I think this is kind of a problem because normally you would have what they call an identity parade where all the individuals share some kind of features. But in this instance, they didn't do that. They're dealing with a witness who was driving a vehicle and probably didn't get a very good look here at whoever she was looking at. So it just seems like they're making it easy on this person to give them what they want.
There was a cyclist that claims he heard a strangling sort of sound in that area between 505 and 520. That's all we get from him. And then there's the moped boys. This is John Ferris and Gordon Dickey. They were riding their moped along the path that day, but when questioned about what they were doing that day, they said they didn't recall anything. When asked if they had anything to do with Jones's murder, they denied all involvement. John Ferris was Jones's second cousin, and he happened to cut his hair the day after the murder and did not show up to the police station for several days following an appeal for everyone that was in the area to come forward and tell them what they'd seen. These are young kids. I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be a big priority for them.
Well, John Ferris admitted later that he cut his hair when he saw that the suspect had wavy brown or ginger hair, and so he wanted to change his look. There are a couple more witnesses, Lorraine Fleming and Rosemary Walsh. Lorraine claimed to see Mitchell at the west end section of Ronsdyke. That's the entrance, the west entrance near his home, at around 5:40 to 5:45 p.m. And she said that the person looked suspicious, that he was wearing a dark green jacket, dark clothing, and she said he appeared to be a teenager. He looked a lot like the Oasis frontman, Liam Gallagher, and she was being driven home by her partner's sister, who is Rosemary Walsh.
I think everyone in the Oasis band looks suspicious, but that's just me.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Luke is not arrested immediately. He is not charged immediately. But it appears that the police are talking to the media and giving them a lot of information about this crime, especially pertaining to Luke Mitchell. Now, as we all know, if it bleeds, it leads. So what does the media do with a lot of these stories and quote-unquote background about Luke?
Well, their stories are basically that there's this young man who committed a satanic-fueled murder. And if you're looking at a case involving a minor, we're supposed to protect that minor's identity. In this case, there was no protecting his identity. It seemed like almost from the get-go that he was tried in the media. It seemed like he had already been tried by them. And then anytime they published a story, it was basically, how could he do this? And I think one of the things that happened from that point was not only did the media turn on him, but Jody's family blamed him as well. And he wasn't even allowed to attend Jody's funeral.
Yeah. It's little things like that that'll get skewed in the media. So they didn't want him at the funeral, so he doesn't go to the funeral. Instead, he does an interview with the media trying to explain his side of the story. Then he goes to her grave after the family's left. But of course, that's construed as, see, he didn't even show up to her funeral. And then he smoked cigarettes by her grave and put them out on her tombstone. Stuff like that. There's a lot of speculation in these stories. And some of them even point out evidence against him. You know, he hasn't even been arrested and put on trial yet. But journalists know better, right?
Well, and I think some of that is because of how he looked and how the police had focused on him. This is a common thing that happens probably in most parts of the world, but when the police arrest someone or focus on a suspect, that person is pretty much thought of as guilty by a good percentage of the public. And we know this because we've seen the media reporting on things like this, and then we see the outcomes of these trials because, well, it's just a foregone conclusion. Why would they arrest someone if they weren't guilty? There's a lot of faith and trust put into law enforcement. And there are law enforcement departments that have earned that trust, but there are others that, I mean, it may look like we go after law enforcement, but a lot of the cases we cover, we're covering because they weren't handled right, no matter where we fall on the verdict.
And especially today, with the advent of the internet, anyone can point at anyone and say they're guilty of just about anything. And you get enough traction on social media and hey, truth doesn't matter anymore.
Well, we were talking earlier about why they really settled on Luke. And I had mentioned Luke was the boyfriend. Luke was supposed to meet Jody. And then we had witnesses who said they saw someone that looked like Luke Mitchell. And one of those witnesses gave a very good description of Jody. So what are the odds? And of course, the times kind of work, at least if you go by the prosecution's case. And so there's one other point. Shane, who was Luke's brother, his first statement to police was essentially, Luke was at home. Later, he altered his statement. Shane ended up telling the police later, I was in my room looking at pornography. And so I don't know when Luke was at home exactly, but I know he was supposed to make dinner. So there's a problem with him vouching for his brother now because he can't do it 100%. So what the police do is say, aha, you didn't tell us the truth the first time. So now they see it as, well, his mother will lie for him. But now his brother is starting to come clean. We think he has a crappy alibi. He may not have been at home making dinner. And of course, his mother said, oh, no, he was at home because he burned the dinner. But the police by that point didn't care. You know, and even in the media, they tried to make it seem like there was some weird relationship between Luke and his mother.
And that's just kind of disgusting. Just because you're suspicious of this guy murdering his girlfriend, you can go with that story, I guess, but then to insinuate there's some sort of incestual relationship or insinuate that his brother is doing something he shouldn't be doing or changed his story, it just gets old real quick, but that's what they do.
Now, sometime in 2003, this would be about a week or so after the murder, Luke's house was searched. Now, it's not like they were able to find a lot, but they did find some things. And one of which was a knife pouch, which Luke had written in pen on it. JJ, 1989 to 2003, which you could read as Jody Jones. And those are the dates that she was born and that she died. On the inside of that pouch, he had a Kurt Cobain quote that was taken from one of Cobain's diaries. The finest day I ever had was when tomorrow never came. But of course, both Jody and Luke were big Nirvana fans. But this isn't seen as, you know, just a tribute. This is seen as he's reveling in her murder.
Absolutely. This is obviously the knife that was supposed to be in this pouch was the one that was used in the murder. And he's inscribed the date that he murdered her. And this is his trophy.
The police had spoken to multiple people that knew Luke and said, oh, I've seen him with a knife. Even his friend David High said, I've seen him with a silver folding knife. But they never found such a knife when they searched his home. So they figured he must have gotten rid of it. And there were knives found not far from where Jody was murdered. There was a knife discovered in a dumpster about a quarter mile from the crime scene while the investigation was going on. But it didn't seem like the knife had been used in this crime. And then many years later in 2015, there was a business owner who was digging in that area and discovered a silver knife with a brown handle. Well, he picked it up using a pair of pliers and dropped it into a plastic bag and handed it over to the Dalkeith police. He said he had found it buried beneath the stones in the wall, but said it looked old. But, you know, 2015, the police had already washed their hands of this case. So that knife was not DNA tested. I'm just making sure that everyone that's listening has an understanding that they looked for the murder weapon, which was obviously a knife, but they never found the murder weapon. And of course, they have one other thing that they're looking for, which is the jacket that Luke Mitchell was seen wearing. There's this idea that Luke had some sort of parka or fishing jacket or something like that, and they couldn't find it. And there was a log burner outside the Mitchells' home, and they really believed that he must have burned the jacket and maybe other articles of clothing. And they had witnesses that would indicate, well, yeah, something smelled like it was on fire over there. And so they had these times that were of interest, 6:30, 7:30, and 10 o'clock. So what they did was they opened up this log burner and they took everything out and had it tested, but their analysis didn't give them anything. There was no evidence that any clothing was ever burned in the log burner, but that didn't stop them, did it, Justin? They were still focused on Luke Mitchell.
Yes, they were. You know, the media had been writing stories that he was obsessed with the devil, had pictures of him going to and from school. Apparently, he had a quote on one of his school books, "I've tasted the devil's green blood," which everyone that played Max Payne back in 2001 knows where that's from. They said that he was obsessed with the Black Dahlia murders and Marilyn Manson. Whoop-de-doo. The interesting part of that, and I personally, I hate even bringing this up, but it's a pivotal point later. But he bought the Marilyn Manson CD after Jody's death. So interesting.
Yeah, it was actually a CD that was in a magazine. So it's hard to know. I mean, was he buying it for Marilyn Manson or was he buying the magazine? And that was just a bonus.
Like you said, they searched his house. They collected evidence. They collected his computer. They collected his phones. They didn't really find anything that showed that he was obsessed with Satanism, Marilyn Manson, or the Black Dahlia, but there's a connection already that's already been made. So run with it, right?
Before we get to the trial, Justin, I want to talk about Jody Jones' funeral. It had been held September 4, 2003 at Gorebridge Parish Church in Midlothian. She was buried alongside her father. And I know we talk about her parents, but her mom was dating Alan Ovens at the time of this murder. Her dad had died previously. And like I said, they didn't allow Luke to attend this funeral. Luke Mitchell goes to trial near the end of 2004, and his trial lasts 42 days. As you can imagine, the prosecution, they have their evidence, they have their suspect, and they have a theory. Their theory is that Jody discovered that Luke was seeing Kimberly, this other girl, and was upset about it. This murder came about because Luke and Jody got into an altercation. That's why they think she was beaten, tied up, and then stabbed and cut. That's their theory. And they bring up this evidence. They bring up the witnesses. They have people now saying, oh yeah, his dog didn't alert him to the wall. He just went over there.
So all the people, all of Jody's family members that were helping with the search have shifted from his dog alerted to Luke walked directly to her body as if he knew where it was the entire time. That's pretty damning.
They say that he disposed of his parka jacket, that he got rid of the murder weapon, that he had support from his mother to lie for him to establish an alibi. They had people saying that he was fascinated with knives. He always had a knife on him, and that he lived an alternative lifestyle in a way because he was into dark music. And of course, they make a huge deal out of Marilyn Manson's music and his connection to it, which is, like we said, there isn't really a connection because he bought a magazine that had Marilyn Manson music on the CD that was included with it. So, you know, if you get away with something in court, you get away with it. So they paint this picture, and Luke was contacted by Jody and was going to meet her. So what are the odds that she goes to meet him, is brutally murdered, and then suddenly his jacket is gone, his knife is gone, and he has a flimsy alibi, and he's basically interested in Satanism. It's an effective case. I know I'm making it brief here, but it's believable because this isn't challenged in a way that makes a difference.
I would assume that his defense would have brought up that there's not any actual evidence tying him to the crime. You know, the prosecutor is saying, well, he was the last person to see Jody alive. when in all actuality, he was only the last person to see her alive if he was the murderer. But technically, her family, the last people to see her alive, because it's never established that he met up with her.
They also heavily rely on the fact that he was using and selling marijuana, because we know marijuana is one of the things that fuels murderous rages. There's also this attempted connection to the Black Dahlia murder. But even during court, they have to admit that that's a reach. But again, you know, it's basically they're assassinating his character or propping him up as a character who would have committed this crime instead of relying on forensic evidence. Now, why would they not rely on forensic evidence? Remember, they scraped his fingernails. They didn't find anything when they scraped his fingernails, even though he was dirty. They said his hair was messy and dirty. He hadn't showered in a while. And so what did they have? They had Jody Jones's body, and they got a little bit out of her clothing as far as DNA goes. But what did that connect to? Stephen Kelly? And that's not even a person that was on their radar. That was her sister's boyfriend, or her fiance, I should say. And so since they left Jody Jones's body out in the rain all night, what did they imagine would have happened to any usable forensic evidence? They're lucky they found anything. So the other problem here is you talk about phone logs. The police didn't even attempt to get Luke's phone records until it was too late. You know, the phone records back then, they were kept for about a year. Luke was arrested about 10 months after the murder. By the time they moved to get his phone records, it was too late. So they rely heavily on this theory and a lot of, well, this must have happened. They were dating and then this happened and they were fighting about this. And then he got support from his family, basically just his mother, because his brother changed his or altered his story later. But it works because they get a conviction here. And we've seen this in other cases. As long as you paint someone the right way with the right brush, well, you can get people to believe it. Doesn't matter if you really have enough information to get that conclusion. You just have to get them to say, I believe you. The only thing that I think was an attempt to be fair here was when they agreed that Luke's DNA on Jody Jones's clothing wasn't a big deal because they had been dating. What they were looking for was blood. They didn't find Luke's blood on her. They found Stephen Kelly's.
But that's not hammered home during trial by the defense. That's not used exclusively as his defense that somebody else had done this. So the jury doesn't have much to go on except for what the prosecution's telling them.
I mean, you would say that they did give this some thought because they didn't reach a verdict on day one. They said it was about 5 hours in on the second day when they reached an agreement. Now, at that time, Luke was 16 years old.
So he no longer looks like that 14-year-old kid. And I know 16 is still what I would consider a kid, but they decide to go with charging him as an adult.
So when he's convicted, the judge, Lord Nemo Smith, announced that he would get a minimum of 20 years in prison. That's before he could be considered for parole. That's a pretty harsh sentence for a case like this, for a young guy like that. Because we look at it and we say, well, where's your evidence?
The judge says, you found evil attractive, and you thought there might be some kind of perverted glamour in doing something wicked. Looking back over the evidence, I cannot fathom what led you to do this. But then he references the Black Dahlia murder. He says, I think you carried an image of these paintings in your mind when you killed Jody. The whole Black Dahlia Marilyn Manson connection, if you believe there's a connection, he bought that magazine after the murder. And I don't want to sound nitpicky right now, but if a judge is literally sentencing you and using this in his determination of how long you're going to spend behind bars, and he can't even get the facts right, give me a break. Like, I don't care if he bought that magazine and listened to Marilyn Manson before the murder. It doesn't make any difference to me. But the fact that this judge is referencing it as if he was worshiping the Black Dahlia murders and evil before the murder. Sorry, you kind of totally missed the boat on that one.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
So Luke is going to prison, and of course he's going to try to appeal, but it's going to be a uphill battle for him, especially after everything that was said and accomplished in this trial. Even after his conviction, the media and journalists would double down because the bad guy went to jail. We were right the whole time with everything we said about him. So they would continue painting the picture of Luke as this evil, murdering, satanic, worshiping kid. And they would go on to keep writing stories about that. I'm not the biggest fan of the media, but it just seems like, what's the point of these stories? The police and the judge and everyone involved with the case would end up doing interviews after his conviction, kind of reinforcing this idea, like, this case was perfect. We executed perfectly and everything we did was great. It's like, okay. I know people want to toot their own horn and give themselves a pat on the back, but if anyone looked at this with unbiased eyes, they wouldn't see a connection to Black Dahlia. They might see a connection to West Memphis 3 and a few other cases, but Black Dahlia, not one of them.
Luke Mitchell's greatest advocate is his mother, Corinne Mitchell. But he also has Dr. Sandra Lean. Dr. Sandra Lean has put together an enormous amount of data that is pretty convincing that no matter what you think about whether Luke could have done this or not, it's very apparent that not only were his rights violated when he was questioned when he was 14, but this whole trial and everything, he was basically railroaded because they didn't have anything tying him to the crime except a bunch of theory. I mean, even the timeline doesn't quite fit. I don't know how else to say that. And so you would think, well, if all this happened and eventually the court even basically admitted that his rights were violated, then how come none of his appeals have worked? Because there have been multiple appeals that the courts have denied. And all I can say is I could bore you with all the details here, but they just keep resting upon the finding in the court by the jury. And they feel like it was fair enough, I guess.
And that's all they really need. But my personal issue with this case, Aaron, is he wasn't supposed to be hanging out with Jody that day. They didn't have any plans. So any suggestion of premeditation, of motive, of anything is put into question for me, because Luke couldn't have planned this because they didn't have any plans. And as far as motive goes, Jody found out about Luke having a girlfriend. How did she find out? While they were on their walk on the path? Or was it one of the text messages that they never gathered off Luke's phone? I mean, how did they figure this out?
This is a big problem, because you would think if they're just looking at Jody's phone, which is probably all they had, it was her mother's phone, wouldn't she have sent a text accusing him of this? I mean, I guess you could argue, well, she didn't want to send that information to Luke over her mother's phone, because then her mother would know. I don't know what she was allowed to do, not allowed to do. She was 14. We could assume maybe that her mother didn't want her to be active. But either way, she was dating Luke, and they all knew it. So for me, it's a big problem that she doesn't send him a message saying, I'm not grounded now, and we need to talk. It was literally, hey, I can hang out now. So where they come up with, she went there, confronted him, and then he started attacking her, and then tied her up with her pants, and then stabbed her and cut her to death. It's a huge reach. And also, he had never showered or anything. So how did he get whatever blood must have come off of her, off of him? I don't understand that, because he was clearly not washed, is the way he was described.
So we're supposed to believe that a 14-year-old was able to murder his girlfriend and on the fly clean up everything, get home, make phone calls, acting totally normal, and not even get a single scratch on him or a drop of blood on him. I mean, I don't see a 14-year-old as being capable of doing this. Not that a 14-year-old's not capable of stabbing and murdering somebody, but getting away with it so cleanly, you could say he didn't get away with it. He was found guilty, but the only evidence they had was just accusations. It wasn't even really circumstantial. You have witness testimony that changed. You have witnesses that think they saw somebody. And did we ever even establish if he owned a jacket or a parka? I mean, they bring it up. They act like he was seen wearing this, but it never seemed to be established if he actually owned one, if he was ever pictured with one before this whole crime. So they say he burned it in the backyard in the fire pit, but they never found evidence of that. They never found evidence that him and his girlfriend had gotten into a fight. They never found evidence that he had any blood on him. It's just like, it just goes on and on. But it all comes back to, this wasn't planned. And I don't think he could have pulled this off so perfectly on a whim. It just doesn't make sense to me at all.
There weren't other suspects, let's be honest. The media and people who are armchair detectives have identified other suspects. Other people of interest, I should say. I personally don't really feel like going through them, because the police, they didn't collect any evidence and test it against enough people, in my opinion. So we're just going to go off of, well, this person had this hair. This person was said to carry a knife. This person was in the area at the time. It's ridiculous. This case is very much about the murder of Jody Jones and the conviction or railroading of Luke Mitchell. And that's where I would keep it. But, you know, it's one thing for someone to be a witness and say, oh, I saw this person with messy hair and a parka. Okay, that doesn't mean that it was Luke Mitchell. So I don't get how they can establish that he had this jacket and then didn't have it.
If Luke didn't do it, how are we going to find out who actually did do it? Will we ever go in that direction? Because his appeals are shot down. I don't think this case is getting turned around anytime soon.
I know that Luke Mitchell, Corinne Mitchell, and Dr. Sandra Lean have all tried, but it's been for nothing. 2013, Luke took a polygraph test. It was administered by Terry Mullins, who's considered to be an expert. But people say it doesn't matter, doesn't mean anything. Some people point out that he had his eyes closed during the test. But of course, it's also said that some officers were trying to distract him, trip him up. So that's why he closed his eyes. But there's also something made of the fact that Luke is getting prison tattoos that are counting off the years that he's been in prison. You used to see them in movies on the wall. They would put a scratch for each year and then a fifth scratch across the four. That's what he's getting tattooed with. And somehow people are saying, well, that's proof. See, he's counting all the years that he's spending for this murder. But I don't see how that's proof of anything. And who is anyone to say how he's supposed to act? It's not like he's taunting anyone from prison. I'm not getting the sense of that. And I had really looked into this. I'm sure you did too, Justin. I even Googled proof Luke Mitchell was a killer, whatever. And I would find a couple of articles that said, oh, here's what the police want you to know, because there was a documentary made titled Small Town Murder by Channel 5 in the UK. And they said it was biased in favor of Luke Mitchell. All right, well, tell me what it didn't tell us. I want to hear. I want to read. They had nothing. I mean, what did you find when you searched for that?
All the evidence against him was he was the last person to see her alive. He was supposed to be the one meeting up with her. And there were a few witnesses that claim they saw him in the general vicinity around that time.
Eyewitness accounts that we know are just spot on.
But Aaron, let's say that all of that is true. He was in the general area at the time, and he's her boyfriend. Is that all we got? I mean, I see them vet and clear people that have way more going against them. Why is his alibi thrown out, but an eyewitness account that goes in?
It's called confirmation bias.
I really want to emphasize this. I came into this case so wanting to find something that pointed to his guilt. I came into this case biased against him, and I'm still stuck at. They got a bunch of nothing.
Well, I tried to go in unbiased, and the biggest question for me, because they couldn't find anything like blood or scratches on him, I thought, okay, so surely they have something on the phones that indicates he was going to be there at a certain time, or I'm leaving right now to meet you, Jody, whatever. They don't have any of that. So in my opinion, they have nothing. They literally make a lot of suggestions that aren't challenged enough, and they get away with convicting basically a kid of something that there's no proof of his guilt. I don't understand it. This is a case, I think there was a rush to get it solved, to get a conviction, because as multiple people involved in the investigation put it, this is the worst murder they'd ever seen. And it was a young girl that was murdered. So they took a lot of information from people who weren't Luke or his family and just took it as truth. They believed those other people. They didn't believe their person of interest or his family.
And here's where I'll say, I don't want to hear a detective or an investigator say, this is the worst murder they've ever witnessed. Because I take that as they're not qualified to investigate it then.
Well, but that happens, Justin. There are crimes that happen in towns that hadn't seen a murder in decades, and the detectives working that case hadn't been involved in anything like that before. But it's who's going to deal with it. I know they brought in other police officers, detectives onto this case, but it doesn't really matter because, as we can tell, they just didn't have enough, in my opinion or yours, to do what they did here and take Luke Mitchell to court. Now, obviously, they got the result they wanted, but it disturbs me that they were able to do that because, again, they've got more evidence against someone else in this case than they do Luke, in my opinion, but that's where it fell. It fell all on Luke Mitchell, who was 14 at the time this crime was committed. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.